Welcome to the Brave Plug Podcast, Season 2, Episode 11, with Pastor Gugu.
Welcome to the Brave Plug Podcast, a platform where brave women share their inspiring stories and their moments of vulnerability, and they give us a sneak peek in how they navigated the mountains that they have come across. And in today's episode, I am joined by the gorgeous, the beautiful, and my favorite regional pastor, Pastor Gugu Jacobs. How are you?
I'm good. Yourself, doing? How are you?
I am very well.
I'm good.
So in today's episode, we will be discussing women in frontline ministry.
Yeah.
I'm excited.
I'm excited too.
Looking forward to hearing what you got to share with us. So maybe let's just start right into it. Let's jump right into it. Mm-hmm. Maybe let's start by defining what is frontline ministry. What does that mean? And how do women contribute to the various roles such as pastors, teachers, and leaders? And maybe if you could share some stats on that as well.
Okay. Right. Having looked at, you know, the front line, the meaning in itself,
yes,
and consulted Google, Oxford, you know, just to get the meaning of front,
yes,
line. And then I do understand that a front line is a position that deals directly with difficult situations.
Mm.
And when you're looking at women in the front line, especially in ministry,
mm,
we learn of so many women that has been through that. And I mean, just to start with Mary,
yes,
mother of Jesus Christ. I mean, the, yes, controversy that, you know, she had to bear just, yes, to ensure that, you know, our Savior is born. So I looked at that, and I do believe that women contributes so greatly in ministry.
Mm.
When you look at churches, you just go to any traditional churches, you'd find that it's a lot of women that are there and they are contributing. They're contributing differently, whether it's evangelism, mm, whether it's putting things together. You know, women are always in the front line. And I looked at the book of Luke.
Mm-hmm.
In the book of Luke, the Apostle Paul was talking about and honoring so many women that were contributing positively, mm-hmm, into the ministry. Joanna.
Mm-hmm.
Joanna was the wife of Chuza, and she was quite influential. In actual fact, she was in the court of King Herod.
Mm-hmm.
So this is not just your, you know, just a mother. She was just influential and held a very high position. We looked at Susanna as well. Susanna was mentioned alongside Joanna and Mary Magdalene, who contributed greatly in the ministry,
mm-hmm,
of Christ. Now, when I looked at the stats in terms of the women in ministry,
mm,
I was really attracted to actually the stats that were mentioned by World Bank.
Okay.
You know, 0% women are mentioned there. And it was really concerning, oh, to say, okay, why are we not there? And to me, it really meant that, yes, women are contributing. And yes, things have changed since 2016. The, mm, stats were showing actually a rise, especially in the US, of 20% women that are now heading churches, are, mm, now senior pastors in churches, but only a 20%. You know, so that tells you that the impact and for the women to move forward into leadership positions in ministry, it has become difficult.
Sure.
But I was also excited just to bring it home here.
Mm.
We have a lot of influential women in our church,
yeah,
in Siloam, right? And when we did the celebration, the 20-year celebration, there was a mention of Dr. Venny Andrew, who, mm, contributed greatly into the building of the church. That was really, you know, I really got attracted and wanted to mention that, because women are moving ahead. And honestly, there are so many barriers that we're going to talk about, but women are really trying to move ahead, and they are definitely, definitely influential.
Sure. Thank you for sharing that. You know, that's so interesting that 0% From the World Bank.
From the World Bank.
Since 2016.
Since 2016.
Yeah, and then now you're saying there's an increase.
It shows an increase, especially in the US. They are, it's now on 20% where there is a mention of women that are heading big churches. Most of the women are said to be, you know, they do head churches. There are so many lead pastors, female lead pastors, but it's small congregations.
Sure. Maybe then if we just look at from a historical perspective, if we can just explore the history of women in ministry from maybe like biblical figures like Deborah. I mean, Deborah was a judge, or Mary, to contemporary leaders, you know, and maybe let's discuss how the perception of women's roles in ministry has just evolved over time.
Yeah. So, I'm definitely not going to speak about Deborah.
It's okay.
But I did consider in the book of Esther. Mm. The book of Esther speaks about Queen Vashti.
Yes.
And my attention was drawn especially to Queen Vashti. Mm. So when you, I'm not going to read the whole scripture, but there in Esther 1, you know, the king was throwing a huge party, you know, for the entire city. Mm. And in I think it's the seventh verse, where the king was now merry, meaning he was drunk and he was entertaining. It's been days they were entertaining. And there came a time where he was merry, and then now he wanted to show off his wife, because the Bible mentions Queen Vashti as being beautiful, right? And he sent his advisors to go and get Queen Vashti so that he can display her. And something that is so abnormal happened when Queen Vashti refused. Now, I do understand. And obviously, when I looked at that as disobedience. I mean, how dare you defile a king like that? Mm. He's calling you, more than he is a king, he's also your husband. He's calling you to come and, you know, show off your beauty. And I mean, naturally, women love showing off, right? Mm. But there was something different about Queen Vashti declining or rejecting that call. And I had to look into it, and also found, understand also that Queen Vashti is also coming from royalty. So she understands the proceedings of the royal life and what you can do, what you cannot do, especially to the king. So it is anomaly for Queen Vashti to have declined that invitation. But nonetheless, she did. And then I looked at the scholars, you know, what are the scholars saying about this decline? Because it's an anomaly. It's really an anomaly. A decree has come out, please get my wife. She puts on her crown and she comes and display her beauty. And the wife just defiles that instruction. And then having considered where she comes from, she would have known what happens to somebody that defiles a king. And why did she take such a chance? So I looked at the rabbinic scholars when they also were getting into you know, the reasons why she did that. And yes, it is an assumption that it could have been that the king asked her to come in only having her crown on and nothing else. And that's why she refused.
Yeah.
There is really no evidence to that. But I'm really drawn to wanting to believe them, because why would she decline that invitation? And for me, it really spoke volumes, because it tells me that she refused to be objectified. She refused to be displayed there as something that, you know, I mean, you would be embarrassed if you are not dressed. You know, you would be embarrassed. And now you have to come and entertain women, men that are even drunk. So from that story, I really believe that it was honestly a phenomenal moment in the city. And it really also draws my attention by the fact that the king got so angry. Not just angry, but he got angry that a decree had to be issued in all the cities, in the local and native languages, that what do you do to a woman that refuses a man? And when I looked into that, Queen Vashti really set a standard. Mm. She really set a standard, and that's why her voice was silenced. Her voice was silenced because she was dethroned. She was dethroned because she refused to be objectified. We see this happening even in secular environment, mm-hmm. you know, when a woman is due for a promotion or even a leadership position, you know, they sometimes get advances to compromise themselves to be in that position. This, for me, is not different from what actually the satanic spirit was trying to do back in the day, mm-hmm. to make sure that, you know, it silences the voice of women and ensures that women do not have their voice, and they do as men want. Mm-hmm. So you can imagine that from that end, even if you don't even want to take it from there, mm-hmm. the fact that as a woman, you only have to do what the man wants, it's still the same in the ministry, because women do not have the confidence to be leaders in ministry. And as you wanted to speak about those barriers in the ministry, these are the barriers that we find in ministry. Not necessarily that sometimes you will be silenced, but there is a whole lot of barriers, systematic barriers. You know, patriarchal and cultural stereotypes, just to make sure that women are marginalized and they just stay in their corner and they do not have a voice in the ministry itself. The fact that World Bank registers 0% of women in the ministry is speaking volumes for me.
Sure, it does indeed speak volumes. And I like how you're saying, you know, Queen Vashti was like trying to stand up for herself, and now she finds herself being silenced, you know. Do you maybe have stories of women who have successfully broken barriers in male-dominated industry? You know, I know that in these industries, it could be very hard as a woman to find your voice, because in many a times, you're probably the first one to be in that industry, or you're the only woman in the boardroom as well. And that in itself presents challenges, because you've got maybe nobody has really set precedents that you can look up to be like, this is how things are done, and you sort of like the first one. But let's just stick on to the breaking of barriers.
Unfortunately, in my line of work, I see that a lot. I would rather stick to the biblical ones that I can speak on, because in my line of work, it happens a lot where you see, you know, female leaders, they have to work 100 times harder than male leaders. But then when I look at still in the book of Esther, you know, yes, Queen Vashti was dethroned. Yes, her voice was silenced. Yes, every man had to go home and ensure that their women knew exactly where their place was and is in being silent, right? But I take reference in what God did to turn that situation so quickly, because immediately after that, there is a Mordecai who is exposed to a problem that she brings into the attention of the king. Mm. And now it then puts back Esther into position as a woman. These things, they happen all the time. Mm. And yes, most of the time it doesn't happen that you will have your Mordecai, that, you know, God will orchestrate a situation to put you back into position. But, you know, just to speak on that, when those situations happen, and I know that we take it exceptionally emotional, and we would also take it to, you know, gender biasness and all those connotations. But the fact is that we are even drawn into understanding, how do we even get back to position by Esther? Mordecai is a man, brings a problem, and now who needs to solve that problem?
A woman. Yeah.
A woman. And now what I really, really appreciate with this book is the fact that God is not only putting Esther or a woman back into her position, but also shows us how we ought to come back into our position. That three-day fast was not just for show. Mm. This was showing us as women that, yes, of course, there was a decree that was spoken back in the day. There is a seed that is planted, and that's why we find it very difficult. I can speak about so many people. I can even speak about Thuli Madonsela, who was who was in the front line, yes, not in ministry, in a secular space. But the fact is that there were challenges for her, and they did everything to probably silence her. But this is how, as a woman, you bounce back. You bounce back in your corner and in the Holy of Holies, and you make sure that God gives you guidance in terms of how to get back into position.
Sure. That is so powerful. And, you know, when you say that, I'm just thinking, there's probably a woman there that wants to get into ministry or is in ministry. And I think many a times we speak about church hurt from the perspective of the congregation. But as a woman in ministry, is there such a thing as you being hurt by the congregation? And how does one then also navigate that? If maybe you can share with ourselves and the listeners how to navigate just those challenging situations or any lessons learned.
It happens. It happens to me. Before we actually came back to Siloam, we experienced church hurt.
Sure.
We experienced church hurt because... yes, not necessarily as a woman, but as a family, we experienced church hurt. And because, you see, one thing that I learned to understand is that in the walk with Christ, we get saved multiple times. Mm. We get saved from different mindsets. And in our situation, we were involved, and God really, really hurt because probably at that time, the word became flesh in our lives, and there were, you know, evidence of, you know, prosperity and that, and then it was used against us. Mm. And definitely, when we left and we came to Siloam, my decision was that I really don't want to be in the forefront. I would rather serve from the back. Actually, I didn't even want to serve. I just wanted to be a church member. But to your question, what is important, especially for everyone, women or not even women, it's important to understand that we are all called by God. And our journey is orchestrated by God. In Jeremiah 29, he says that he knows you, he knows us, and he has big and good plans for us. Mm. So it's important to understand that even in your desperate moment, even in our hurt, there is no way we can even silence the voice of God.
Sure. That is powerful. Thank you so much, Pastor Gugu, for sharing that. Because isn't it sometimes when we face these challenges, they're always meant to prevent us from fulfilling that purpose? Because, I mean, imagine if you had stayed there and said, I don't want to serve this moment right here, wouldn't be happening. And, I mean, I've been blessed to share sessions with you in our tribes. And, I mean, I know that even in those sessions, you drop pearls of wisdom. You know, you're always teaching us and encouraging us. So maybe as a closing point, just empowering the next generation, if we may just discuss strategies for encouraging young women to pursue these leadership roles within the church, and maybe if we can highlight any practical resources, maybe education, training programs and workshops that can support them in their journey, so that they can know that there is someone that they can lean on to, even when times get tough.
Absolutely. I think the importance of mentorship, the importance of being involved in the church, the importance of drawing from the elders. Mm. And I know probably there's generational differences where we do things differently, but the word is the word and it never changes. The word is the word today, tomorrow, and forever. The word stands. And I think the importance of young people or people that I knew even in salvation, the importance of drawing from the elders. I mean, when you look biblically, Ruth and now I'm forgetting the mother-in-law.
Ruth and
Naomi. Naomi. Yes. You look at those relationships. Relationships are very important in the ministry. Relationships are important. And what is very, very important that I really just want to share is that once you are in the ministry and your goal is just to be at the back like I was, you must know that the enemy is after your voice. Because, I mean, why would he be so invested in ensuring that you are not in the front line, you are not, being mentored, you are not attending tribes, you're not coming in for Tuesday services, and on Sundays you just get into your car or however you came and you go back without socializing. Because as a church is meant for us to grow spiritually. And when you, I mean, there are so many pastors in our church. There are so many mentors. There must be somebody that you look up to and you would like to connect with and have a relationship with that person so that you can learn. Being mentored, having a teachable spirit, for me, that's one thing. And being hungry. One thing about being saved and about being a woman that I really, really love. Myself and my husband, we could talk about something and he will go and pray. And I will just, sit in my bedroom and God will reveal whatever it is. Our hearts are very close to God. So it's important that as a woman to know that. And that's why we are so emotional, because the enemy is actually trying to get us off, God and off the message of God, so that we are so invested in our emotions, in our hurt, and.
Sure.
I hope I understood your question.
You did, and you answered it so well. Thank you for that. So, Pastor Kruger, I know that you will be leading the church at Balfour. I don't know what prayers they rendered, but they're so blessed to have you and Pastor Ronnie leading them. Thank you so much for sharing with us and for joining us this evening. We do hope to see you again in part two. Thank you.
Well, I think I'll be very excited to join for part two. Yes. Probably we'll have more stories being in the front line in ministry.
Oh, definitely.
I'm looking forward to that. Thank you for having me.
Definitely. Thank you so much. And that brings us to the end of today's episode. Thank you for joining us.